Yeah, I'm a little bit earlier than advertised today. I should have a news bulletin for you now, but my friends at FSN in Washington, well, they've screwed right up, so they have. No news. It's good news. No news bulletin, so it's me. It's at the BBG. It's 3 o'clock in Salford, just after 3 o'clock. It is Friday, the 27th of November, 2020. I hope this finds you in good form. I'm in good form. It's great to be back with you. I missed you. I missed you big time, so I did. Let's have Friday's Richie Allen Radio Show. Let's do it then.
It's the BBG, not the BBC. You're listening to the Richie Allen Radio Show, live from Salford in Greater Manchester.
It's the Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Yeah, it's like I've been away for about 20 years, pressing buttons and things are working and not working and all the rest of it. As usual, I do look forward to reading your tweets, so do send them to me. Well, it's at Richie Allen Show on Twitter. Going to have a look back at the week's big stories. It won't be entirely COVID-centric. And, well, we'll have one or two giggles along the way. And I've got one or two nice cuts, some choice cuts lined up for you as well this Friday. Drive time, a nice way to begin the weekend. Well, there you are. Hey, I love this. Thanks to Raj for sending me this. Let me just reach back there. Let me reach back there now. One of the things you should never do, children, if you have ambition to one day be a radio presenter or indeed a television presenter, one thing you should never do is read praising emails or praising letters. Letters and emails that give you a big old head. Should never do that. Your listeners don't want to hear you reading out praise. I'm just about to do that. No, there was a very nice message left on Facebook from Simon Webling. How you doing, Simon? He said, it's great that I'm okay. It's great that I'm okay after my dentist experience this week. Recovering from your toothache, Richie. You are a legend, he said. Your shows are brilliant. Keep taking the tablets there, Simon. He said, if it wasn't for my window cleaner, I would never known your shows. Window cleaner. I've been listening for the last 3 months. People like you give me a will to keep going. Thanks very much, Simon. Window cleaners, when I'm cleaning windows. It's amazing the people you meet around Salford and who tell you they're listening. And it's always tradesmen and tradeswomen. I'm big in the trades, the Richie Allen Radio Show, yeah. I got another letter, by the way. I did put this on Twitter. And somebody advised me that I should have blacked out my NHS number. I don't care about things like that. But I had another letter, that's it there, from NHS England and NHS Improvement. NHS England and NHS Improvement, whatever that means. Skipton House, London Road, London. Right. Like to remind you to book an appointment with your GP practice or a pharmacy to get the flu jab. Vaccination. It's important you get vaccinated, as your health record indicates that you are eligible for a free NHS flu vaccine this season. Even if you had it last year, the type of flu can vary each winter, so it is recommended to have the flu vaccine again this year or you won't be protected. And it goes on, importantly, to say that getting vaccinated each year helps to protect you and others. And others. There's a second such letter I've had in recent weeks. And I've also had several text messages urging me to go and have the flu jab. Now, you know, you don't even need to be an observer, a watcher, or a consumer of the independent media to know that the flu vaccine very rarely works. Quite often in the spring, late spring, early summer, the UK tabloid media will be full of stories, embarrassing stories, about how, well, last winter's flu vaccine didn't work. It was for the wrong strain of flu. I have no intentions of taking any flu vaccine. When I went to the pharmacy, which is around the corner from me to collect my inhaler last week, the lovely, and she is lovely, woman who runs said pharmacy said to me, Richie, your doctor has asked us to remind you to come in and have your flu jab. There's no getting away from it. I haven't had it before and I never will. Thank you. Protect others. Protect others. And I've been thinking about this over the course of the last few days. Sitting in a dentist's chair. Sitting up, holding my face, crying in agony in the nights. I've been thinking about this. What is my obligation to my fellow man? I'm an average Joe, right? An average Paddy. I live on a council estate. That's what I do. I work. I'm quiet. I'm a very private guy. Go about my business very quietly. What are, or I should say, what is my responsibility to my fellow man? And I've never been a religious man. I've never been very religious. I've attended Mass on occasion, but I'm not very religious. The Ten Commandments, that's about the size of it really, isn't it? The Ten Commandments are the Ten Commandments is a great missal. It's a great document. It's a great charter for how you should behave. You can't fault it really, or take issue with it really, can you? Yeah, the Ten Commandments. Let's do them one by one. And I want you to reflect as we're reading them out together on how many you may have broken over the years. Be honest now with yourself. You don't have to be honest with me. Let's do them one by one. Thou shalt not have any other gods before God. Guilty? Innocent? Guilty? Elvis is God. That's number one. Thou shalt not make yourself an idol. Thou shalt not take the Lord's name in vain. Guilty. Remember the Sabbath day and keep it holy. Guilty. Honour your father and mother. Guilty. Thou shalt not murder. I love that one. Thou shalt not murder.
Be no murdering done around here, I don't mind telling you.
Innocent. I would hope you're innocent of that as well. Thou shalt not steal. Guilty. We've all done it. If you've been in a supermarket at any time during the course of your life and you've had a raisin or you've had a jelly baby from the picket mix, you're guilty. You're a thief. And that's about the size of it. I've done that. Not recently, it must be said, but I've done it. Guilty. Thou shalt not testify or bear false witness against your neighbour. Innocent. Thou shalt not covet thy neighbour's goods. Innocent of that one as well. So why the preamble? Well, the government and the scientific circus performers advising the government have, over the course of the last 7 months, they've had one argument and one argument only. That they must protect vulnerable people by putting everybody else under virtual house arrest. You must transform your way of life to protect others from a virus that might, remember, be harmful to them. Now, does that argument in any way stand up? Forget for a minute that we know what we know about the so-called COVID-19 virus. Forget about it. Leave that to one side. Pretend for a moment that there's a virus that is prevalent, that is out there, and that it is serious. So I've been thinking a lot on this, because you never know when a virus might come along. A real one that might be dangerous and that might be very, very, I don't know, how do I say this? That it might do enormous damage to people. It might kill people. It might hospitalise people. It might maim people. It might leave people with debilitating illnesses that go on for years. Let's pretend. Now here's a guy you see all the time on UK television since the outset, since the beginning of all of this. A guy called Gabriel Scally. He's an Irish bloke, an epidemiologist, and works with the Royal College of Medicine. He was on Good Morning Britain the other morning, and here he is talking about selfishness and your responsibility and how he doesn't believe that you get to make an individual choice about what you do or what you don't do. He explains it here, Gabriel Scally.
The suggestion that it's down to individual choice and you just give people the chance to make their own choice. Well, it isn't a choice just for them. It's not like deciding, am I going to smoke or not? Will it give me lung cancer or not? That's a personal choice, absolutely. This is about a highly contagious virus that can spread to other people, and it sets off a chain of infection, and we get spread across populations again.
Well, you know, so Professor Scally, to jump in.
Choice. No.
It's not a personal choice, was how he summed up there. Okay? Now, my responsibility to my fellow human beings, this is serious, this, because the government has framed this as a philosophical argument. My responsibility to my fellow human beings is fairly simple. Jesus summed it up, didn't he? Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. You could say words to live by. You could say a philosophy for any age. How do you practice that? Well, in lots of different ways. I drive really carefully. Not slowly, not dangerously slowly, but carefully. When I'm out and about in my white Renault Megane estate. Jesus. It's hardly a shaggin' wagon. That's the car I drive. I drive it carefully because I have no right to risk the safety of others. Right? Right. None. I have no right to drive like an idiot, putting other people's lives in jeopardy on the highways and byways. And it doesn't do me any harm. Doesn't do me any harm whatsoever. Right? Right. Okay. That's one way that you practice. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. As the commandments state, don't steal, don't assault, don't murder, don't covet, don't shag the neighbour's wife, etc. Fair enough. Philosophy to live by. But asking people to put themselves in harm's way, not at the risk of harm, but actual self-harm. Government isn't asking you to take some risk of personal harm. The government is saying, harm yourself. Screw yourself. Mess your life up. Put yourself in serious jeopardy in order to prevent somebody you never met. And it might be old, might be infirm, might be sick, might be vulnerable, asking you to harm yourself to try and prevent others getting a respiratory infection. I say that's untenable. There's no justification for it. You're asking people to trade their own health, their own well-being, and their own prosperity to cause themselves harm to maybe help prevent the spread of a so-called virus. And as I said, the government presents this as a philosophical choice. And leftists, not the left, because there isn't any left anymore, little Hitlers masquerading as the left have swallowed this hook, line and sinker and have run with it. They love it. This idea that you're a horrible, selfish, self-obsessed person, an awful person, if you think it's okay to go about your business because you might expedite the transmission of a virus to somebody else. So the government presents it as a philosophical choice. We have the responsibility to protect the nation's health, and you have a responsibility to protect the health of others. Well, only so far as I shouldn't smoke in the presence of someone who doesn't smoke and who doesn't like it. No, I've never smoked. I shouldn't drive dangerously. I shouldn't have elaborate firework displays in back gardens in built-up areas. These are things that could cause physical harm to people. So I shouldn't do those things. I should keep other people in mind. Fair enough. It's how I live. But it's utterly redundant to ask me to wreck my financial present and my future and the future of my children and grandchildren to cause myself and my family unimaginable stress, depression, and of course the physical illnesses that arise out of that. To do great harm to myself, lest somebody I've never met and never will meet, and who couldn't give an arse about whether I live or die, I shouldn't have to do that self-injury in order to maybe help somebody avoid an illness that may or may not exist. And I had this argument a few weeks ago with a woman who is wheelchair bound and who has a golden Labrador dog in by her side all the time as a helper dog. Nice woman. Professional woman. Has a cerebral palsy. Got into an argument with her. Not one of my highlights, getting into an argument with the disabled lady. But we got into an argument because she said that I had a duty to accept not going out to socialise, not going to work, not having any life, in order to protect her because she was vulnerable. That's what she said to me. And I said, when I can't pay my mortgage next month, are you going to chip in? And that ended that argument. Because it's a redundant argument. I owe the wider Salford public no consideration whatsoever except those considerations I mentioned already. Don't rob them. Don't bear false witness against them. Don't steal their wives. Not sure too many wives would have the BBG, to be honest. Don't murder them. And outside of that, I owe nobody my physical and mental well-being. My job, my future. You're vulnerable to a disease? Tough shit, Paddy. It's got nothing to do with me. Sorry, you're not asking me to drive safely. You're not asking me to step outside to have my cigar. You're not asking me to not play loud music after 10 o'clock. You're asking me to destroy my own life. No. And amazingly, the government here, and it has been hugely successful in painting what I've just said as a selfish choice, when there's nothing selfish about what I just said. Listen to your Smiths. Listen to Morrissey. Heaven knows I'm miserable now. In my life, what's the lyric? Why do I give valuable time to people who don't care if I live or if I die? I love my friends. I love my family. I love you, you half of an idiot, yeah. But I don't owe anybody anything. I don't owe anybody the basic sacrificing of my own health just in case they catch a cold or catch the flu. It's insane. There is absolutely nothing selfish about that whatsoever. It is 19 minutes past the hour. This is Richie Allen on Friday. Music from The Cure. We've got music coming up from The Hollies a bit later on. Lots happening today. Back with more news and reflection on the week's big stories. The BBG live from Salford here in the Northwest. Keep those tweets coming in. I'll be reading them out as I go along. Ah, The Old Cure there. And Friday, I'm in love. Richie Allen with you for the next I don't know how long. Very scientific, this radio programming, you know. How long is your Friday radio show, Richie? I haven't a clue. As long as it lasts. Jesus. Lovely. Music later on from The Hollies. Music from Fairground Attraction. Music from Tight Fit. And if I can fit it in, music from the Queen of Soul, Aretha Franklin, a bit later on. Because I've been away for the best part of a week, I probably will lose the old voice a bit later on in the show anyway. Donkey says, I got the NHS text, Richie, inviting me for a flu jab. I've never had one, and I'm not starting now, says Donkey. Good man. Hi to my friend John Parsons. How you doing, John? Just retweeted that. Made me smile as well. Hilda says, excellent point, Richie. I'm totally with you on that. Thank you, Hilda. It's not that we don't do our bit for people. It's not that we're not charitable. It's not that we don't care about people. We do favours for people all the time. We're there for people when they need us. We're neighbourly. We do consider people. But don't tell me that you might get the flu or you might get some respiratory illness, and because you might get it, that I've got to basically turn my entire life upside down. No. I'm sorry. Doesn't make me selfish. Doesn't make me right-wing. Doesn't make me awful. Doesn't make me any less of a human being. It's a sacrifice that I won't make. Hi to Dean Smith. Listening to the show on the way back to Sheffield in the car. How are you, Dean? Hi to Peter. Hi to Peter John McCann. David Stanford. Lovely jubbly. Now, somebody's tweeted me about Dr. Vernon Coleman. Vernon Coleman, the Dr. Vernon Coleman, by the way, will very soon be appearing in The Light Paper. You remember Darren from The Light Paper? It's a brand new free newspaper which is being distributed. Incredible success. There's been 4 issues of The Light Paper. Has there been 3? I think there's been 4. And they've got tens of thousands of copies of it being distributed into people's letterboxes all over the country. It's a brilliant new development in the independent media. And Vernon, Dr. Vernon, will be occasionally, I won't say regularly because I don't know, I spoke with Vernon via the medium of email very briefly about this, but he told me he will have a column in The Light Paper coming up very soon. That's a good development, that. I like that. VernonColeman.com, BrandNewTube.com. You'll find Vernon Coleman's videos, the doctor. Now, somebody called Norfolk Inway. Yeah. Just use a name on Twitter. Can you use a name like Bill or Bob or Nancy or Amy? It makes it easy for me. Says, Ian Collins, Richie, mentioned having Vernon on and said that Vernon was contacted, but that Vernon would only go on to debate Chris Whitty or Patrick Vallance. Is that true? If so, why wouldn't Vernon take the opportunity to debate someone else just to get the message out? Well, in reality, what Talk Radio did do was it invited the programme, Ian Collins is a good guy, very good presenter, I like Ian. They invited Vernon to come on, but to be part of a panel show. Now, Vernon Coleman has been around the block 722 times exactly. Exactly 722. When you've been around the block 722 times, you know to avoid panel shows at all costs. There's no point. You don't get any time to expound upon, to expand on your ideas. So Vernon got back and said, thanks for the invite, but I would prefer to be debating a government advisor in a one-to-one where I get the chance to put the sorts of questions to the government advisors that are not being put to them by the BBC or by Sky News or whatever. To be fair to Talk Radio, its presenters have done a better job in terms of mainstream media exposure, mainstream media coverage. Talk Radio has done a much better job than anybody else in the mainstream media. So Vernon said yes, happy to, but not to be on a panel with 5 or 6 people for 10 minutes when I don't get to say very much or develop any theme. And that's where that one is, really. Let's move on. It's 27 and a half minutes past the hour. Grannies! Grannies. Grannies have never had as much attention as they're getting now. Grannies have never had as much attention as when a young Wayne Rooney was stalking geriatric wards around Merseyside looking for a few cheap thrills. They must be loving it. Don't harm Granny. Don't hug Granny. Don't talk to Granny. Don't ask Granny for a Werther's Original. Don't offer Granny a Werther's Original, because if you do, Granny might die, seemingly. Did you see Chris Whitty, the chief medical officer, yesterday, standing alongside Boris Johnson? Did you see him? Chief medical officer, standing with Johnson and Patrick Vallance. If Chris Whitty was ever laid in his life, I'm a Chinaman. I don't care if he has kids. I want DNA tests. Here's Whitty yesterday. And well...
Would I encourage someone to hug and kiss their elderly relatives? No, I would not. It's not against the law, and that's the whole point. You can do it within the rules that are there, but it does not make sense, because you could be carrying the virus, and if you've got an elderly relative, that would not be the thing you'd want to do in the period where we're running up to a point where actually we might be able to protect older people. So I think people just have to have sense, and I think this is very much what I think people will do. The fact that you can do something, this is true across so many other areas of life, doesn't mean you should. In answer to your direct question about what I'll be doing, actually, I'll be on the wards.
I'll be on the wards. It's not illegal now to hug your granny, said Chris Whitty. It's within the rules, but don't do it. You walk into your gran's on Christmas morning. Gran does what gran does. Walks towards you with arms outstretched. Stand down, back away, granny. And that other clown, Patrick Vallance, the chief scientific advisor. This is Vallance with the shares in GlaxoSmithKline. Shares to the tune of £800,000. Yeah. He couldn't wait to endorse what Whitty had said.
If you want to make those connections with family, it has to be done in a way where you try and make sure that you don't increase the risk. And as Chris said, I think hugging elderly relatives is not something to go out and do. It will increase the spread to a vulnerable population.
If you want them to survive, to be hugged again.
Yeah.
If you want them to survive, to be hugged again. If you want them to survive, to be hugged again, don't go hugging them at Christmas. It's been a mad week of that. It's been granny this, granny that, granny the other. Jeremy Vine, BBC Radio 2 on Tuesday. And every day, really. This is madness.
What is the point of seeing granny on Christmas Day if you end up burying her in the new year?
Worth hearing that one again.
What is the point of seeing granny on Christmas Day if you end up burying her in the new year? I'm sorry for the bluntness of that thought. vine@bbc.co.uk is the email. And enclose your phone number, please.
I'm sorry for the bluntness of that thought. This is a BBC presenter saying this.
What is the point of seeing granny on Christmas Day if you end up burying her in the new year? I'm sorry for the bluntness of that thought.
Yeah, I'm sorry for the bluntness of it, but don't go to granny's at Christmas in case you end up burying her at some stage in the new year. And he gave out the email address and he gave out the phone number and he solicited some calls. And be Jesus, be jeepers, he got some calls like this one. Again. You can't believe your bloody ears.
Now, the virus has no idea concept of Christmas whatsoever.
Hey, the virus has no concept of Christmas whatsoever.
It will kill people over that time. And I would like to ask anybody who's so desperate to have Christmas, are they willing to trade the loss of a loved one for a day of celebration?
This is like, you remember the First World War? Well, not remember it, but you know, when they had Christmas Day.
You're not going to believe what Vine says now.
And yeah. The famous moment where the Germans and the British soldiers came out of the trenches and played football.
Yeah, exactly.
This is the same mindset. You can play football with the virus.
Yes, yes. Jeremy Vine is saying, you see, at least the Germans in Belgium, at least the Germans, right, crossed no man's land with the English soldiers, the Tommies, and they said, right, Christ, we're humans after all. Let's stop the madness and the bloodshed and the bombs and running over the top to our certain deaths. Let's have a kick about. You could do that with the Germans, but you can't do that with COVID. There's no reasoning with the fucking virus, says Jeremy Vine. Right?
No, Lord.
Even the Scottish guy is like, what did I just hear there?
Talking in the First World War, and you're right, it was before my time. But they were human beings. They were compassionate people who were fighting for their country, maybe not necessarily believing in what they were fighting for or agreeing with it, but they were fighting for their country. And they took a day out and everybody got on. The virus has no integral mindset of this is a good idea, we'll let everybody have Christmas, then we'll go back and start killing people again. They will die. They will die.
They will die. They will die because you can't have a truce with the virus. So easing the restrictions over Christmas is wrong. No historic game of footy with the virus. Because the virus is a bastard. There's no conscience. My pal Jean-Ann Crowley sent me an email yesterday, I think. There's a scientist in Ireland called Luke O'Neill. Mugwump, Muppet, any name you can think of is appropriate. Trinity College Dublin, I believe. And he's on, as I said, television and radio in Ireland all the time. News Talk, love him. RTE, love him. Never off the telly. And he said this about Christmas. I don't have the audio, but I read this on RTE.ie, courtesy of Jean-Ann. Talking about Christmas, Professor Luke O'Neill recommended one of the ways. Well, he set out some parameters for Christmas dinner that might give us a chance of avoiding becoming infected by the dreaded virus. So if you are having Christmas dinner with others, Professor O'Neill has said, bring your own dinnerware. Bring your own dinnerware, your own cutlery. Bring your own dinnerware and your own cutlery. And I was thinking when I was reading that yesterday, people with obsessive compulsive disorder are like, yeah, yeah. Do you ever have OCD? Do you ever have OCD? I did as a child. As a child, I grew out of it. I wouldn't touch anything that anybody else touched. Yeah. I had real phobias about door handles. And if you had a sip of water from a cup and you gave it to me, I just saw germs and I wouldn't touch it. Real OCD when I was much younger. Of course, I grew out of it. I'm a proper pikey now. I drink out of anything. And he said, yeah, bring your own dinnerware. Have one person do all the serving to keep the numbers down in the kitchen. Stagger people sitting around the table to avoid people sitting opposite one another. Presumably he means try and avoid people sitting opposite one another so that they're not speaking loudly at one another and spreading their COVID germs. Don't spend too long in each other's company, said this agent. You can't be having 10 hours in a stuffy room together playing family games. Professor Luke O'Neill. It gets curiouser. And it gets curiouser, dear listener, so it does. Back in a minute.
Renowned healer Mark Bajerski travels the world to find the most unique and powerful crystals for self-healing. Since the ancient times, crystals have been used as healing tools. They hold a natural healing vibration and are highly charged in positive energy. Mark teaches how to channel the universal energy and transfer it to the crystal to activate its healing power. Each crystal is used for its unique ability to target a different physical or emotional challenge. Mark Bajerski is an author, healer, speaker, and founder of the Pure Energy Healing Academy. He shares powerful messages of inspiration and healing on his daily YouTube videos, reaching millions worldwide. Mark's crystals, healing oils, and incense sticks are most sought after by other healers. His collection is available online at www.markbajerski.com. His work is presented through Lemon House, a company that creates and curates consciously made gifts.
And you're very welcome back. The time is 22 and a half minutes to 4 o'clock. It is a Friday, the 27th of November. You know that anyway. It's an old DJ thing, isn't it? Time check, time check, time check. Traffic report, weather check. It's cold out there. There isn't as much traffic as normal because of the lockdown. So there you are. I'll be back with more chat in a moment this Friday after this from the Hollies. Love this. Richie Allen Radio Show, live from Salford. 18 minutes before the Hollies. All I need is the air that I breathe. Great tune, that. Great tune. Flicking around the remote control last night. I don't know if you came across this yourself. You may have done. But Sky News had a big feature on last evening around about 8 o'clock. And it promoted very, very heavily. Gave it a lot of advertising. Race and Revolution. Will Britain Change was the name of the programme. And it was presented by Gillian Joseph, who was one of Sky's black news presenters. Experienced presenter. You see her on Sky quite regularly, often with Stephen Dixon. Race and Revolution, Will Britain Change? And there was a lot of talk in it about microaggressions and that sort of thing. You know, how subconsciously how white people like me might be impacting negatively on BAME people. Now, BAME is black, Asian, minority, ethnic. How people like me could be subconsciously having a negative impact on people through microaggressions. And that was only one part of it. And it featured a lot of black people talking about their experience of being black and telling us what needs to change. I didn't watch much of it now because I've seen it all before and I don't have much time for it. This idea that we have an institutional problem with racism in this country or in any country in Western Europe. I just don't believe it. I've never seen any evidence for it. In fact, I've rolled out statistics on this programme. Not the statistics that suit my argument, but irrefutable statistics that show that really the opposite is true, really. That this country, my own country, Ireland, doesn't have any real problem with racism and that the people on these islands are generally very, very tolerant and could care less, really, or couldn't care less about somebody's background. That not, you know, notwithstanding the fact that, of course, in every room or in every company or in every place, you'll have the odd dipstick, won't you? Anyway, so it got me thinking, and I was thinking about an old prank phone call that I think most recently played on this programme about 3, 4, maybe even 4 years ago. It's one of my favourite bits of radio that I ever heard. And I think it's relevant now, as we're... Do you say gaslit, do you? Do you say gaslighted, do you? Beaten down, browbeaten, I would say, by the media, by the institutions of government, constantly telling us that we're bad people, that we're racist people, that we're bad, we're selfish, we're racist, we're hateful, and all the rest of it. And there's a lovely little bit of audio I'm going to play you now. Not, like I said, it's been a long time since I played this, and it's very apt for the times we live in. All this racism shite in the news, all of this gaslighting. It's the best prank phone call I've ever heard in my life. And it centres around Barry, who's an Irish guy living in the United States, living in Florida, and his Irish girlfriend, right, living in the US. This is 10 years ago now. They have a baby and they received the birth certificate, but Barry wasn't listed as the father on the birth cert, which is very annoying for him. It's some red tape, some interstate red tape nonsense, some, what would you call it? Red tape is probably the best way of putting it. A real pain in the backside. They're not married, so his name isn't on the birth cert and he wants something done about it. So his missus calls the local radio station, tells them Barry is really wound up by this and he wants his name on the birth certificate. So please wind him up, says his girlfriend. And they do wind him up by getting an actor to portray an Indian man. An Indian man calling from a local authority to talk to Barry about the birth cert. And this is absolutely world class. There might be some language in here that some people might find offensive, but what are you going to do?
Hello?
Hello, please. I'm calling to speak with Mr. Barry, please.
Yeah, this is him.
My name is Ahmed. Ms. McCann has requested that we put your name on the birth certificate, but we cannot put your name on it.
Why is that?
First of all, we have no way of knowing if you are actually the father.
Yeah, well, I've signed all these papers in the hospital before the baby was discharged, and when the birth cert came back, my name wasn't on it.
Yes, that's because you are not married. This is the way it happens here in America. I don't know.
Right. So tell me what I need to do.
There is no possible way that this Miss Geraldine person could not have been with anyone else, please.
Huh?
Is it 100% because we get this all the time and then we do the DNA test and then you're not the father? So I'm asking you now so I can check off the little box. I have a questionnaire I have to ask you.
It's 100%. 100%. Go on to the next question.
All right. Well, don't listen. If you want your name on the birth certificate, we will go at my pace. Okay? I don't know.
Tell me what I need to do to get my name on the birth cert. I don't need this.
At what point do you plan on marrying this woman?
None of your business. Next question.
Excuse me, sir, that is the question on here I have to ask you.
Yeah, I'm after answering it.
Well, then I don't have to put your name on the birth certificate.
You asked me to answer the question. I'm after answering the question. Go on to the next one.
Okay, so you're telling me I should put down you're not going to marry this woman, yes?
None of your business. I said the next question. No, you're after answering the question for you. So go on to the next one.
Smarty McPants, listen to me. If you're going to have more children, I have to know because you're going to...
Hold on a second. I can't understand your broken English. Your English is very bad. Put someone else on the phone.
Listen, my English is better than your English.
Where are you from?
I am from India. Where are you from?
Yeah, India. Put someone else on the phone, will you?
Oh, now you have a problem with India. Where the hell are you from? You're not an American.
Yeah, you're right. You're a proper genius, aren't you? Put someone else on the phone, will you?
You don't sound like somebody who should be anybody's father. I'm trying to help you here.
And where's your father, tell me? Out in the paddy field, is he picking rice or something? Put someone else on the phone.
Now, I'm going to ask you again. Are you planning on having any more children out of wedlock, please?
I might and I might not.
Okay, fine. So I put down that, yes, you're going to have more bastard children. Is that what I'm going to say, yes?
Huh? Do it again.
You know, I am very good at the world geography, and you sound to me like you're Irish. If you're Catholic...
You're not very good at the English.
I am doing
your English is very broken. You're mixing up your words and everything.
No wonder she doesn't want to marry you, okay? Now I understand.
Yeah, you're probably right. Just go on to the last question, will you, say?
Oh, excuse me.
You're the one that said religion. Go on to the last question, you annoying bastard, will you?
Potato eater.
What?
Yes, you with the small schwankies. Everybody knows about the Irish.
You don't know who you're talking to, you stupid. Go on to the last question, will you? Please.
I need to know, since you are not planning on marrying this woman, are you a citizen of the
United... I didn't say that, you stupid.
If you're going to marry her, then when are you planning on marrying her?
Oh, will you? You ask the questions and I'm answering the things. Don't put you... Should you... I tell you what, you write down whatever you want and all the answers. How's that?
That's fine.
Are you finished now, are you?
I'm not going to put your name on the birth certificate.
I don't give a because I'm going to ring back and get someone else.
Listen, Cracker, there's nobody else here but me.
Cracker, huh?
Yes, Mick Cracker.
You're very racist, boy.
I ask you again, if you're so Catholic, why are you having the bastard children out of wedlock?
Bastard children, huh?
Yes, it's supposed
to
be...
How many children have you?
I've got four.
How many wives have you?
I've got one.
I tell you, every day you should get down and pray to Abba, or who the f*** do you ever pray to, and thank God that you have one wife, for f***'s sake.
You are the dumbest man I've ever spoken to.
Is your question finished, is it?
No, I need to know, was this a planned pregnancy?
Jesus Christ Almighty.
Look, I'm just going down the questions on the form. Don't yell at me.
Is this the last question, is it?
Do you have any kind of hereditary illnesses or diseases in your family?
Yes, I have all the diseases I caught from your whore of a wife.
Okay, so there you go.
Put that down, yeah?
At least I have a wife. I care enough to marry her before I have little immigrant children walking around. I am proud to be an American. Can you say the same?
Yeah, you're proud to be American with a stupid of an accent. I don't hear too many Americans talking like that, do you?
You sound like a leprechaun. That's
good
what
luck.
You sound like.
Yeah, I tell you, leprechaun.
Listen, you Lucky Charms eating bastard.
Yeah, you go again with your good English, isn't it? Get off the phone.
Barry, this is Dave Brody from Elvis Duran and the Morning Show. You've been phone tapped.
What?
Your not wife thought it would be a good idea to phone tap you.
Jesus Christ Almighty. I'm off the road. I'm in the middle of a car park here. Jesus, you're going to get me to. Charlie, you're dead.
Fairground attraction, perfect on the Richie Allen Radio Show. That prank call, which is about 10 or 11 years old, I played just before the track there, with Barry the Irish guy being pranked by Dave, by the comedian Dave, on the Elvis Duran Morning Zoo Radio Show, which may or may not still exist, I have no idea. That wouldn't be allowed now. It wouldn't be allowed air. And if it did air, you'd have all manner of people, not necessarily people from India or people with an Indian heritage or a Bangladeshi heritage, but you'd have all manner of people taking offence on behalf of people with roots in India or people who live in India, born in India, born in Bangladesh. And there's nothing remotely racist about that. I've looked at this for years, you know, this issue of racism and people being asked to leave jobs, being left go from jobs, being moved aside, being censored or censured because something they said was deemed to be racist. And most of the time, you'll find that it falls into that category, into the category of people having an argument and the argument descending, sadly, into a place where people begin to start referencing the appearance of or the background of the person they're arguing with. That isn't racism. Having a go at a guy that you're arguing with because he has a dot on his head or his wife does or Paddy Fields is not racism. Boris Johnson might be the most detestable, grotesque barrel of monkey spunk on planet Earth at the moment, and I would argue he is, but referencing letterboxes and burkas isn't racism. It's what we've always done. And don't think the other side doesn't do it either. What do you mean the other side? Don't think that people around the world don't do it either. Don't make fun of the appearance of others in the West and their habits and their cultures and their customs. Of course they do. It's what we do. Sometimes we do it in anger. Sometimes we do it in humour. But it's not racism. Racism for me has always been fundamentally very easy to explain. It is the belief, the real belief, that somebody who comes from a different background to yours is somehow less human than you, is morally inferior to you. If you hold that genuine belief, and I'm not saying that some people don't, I'm sure you'll find these people, but the vast majority of people on planet Earth don't hold that belief. They don't. They don't think that people from Pakistan or India or Nigeria or Native Americans or Native Australians, they don't think those people are intellectually, morally inferior. We don't hold such opinions. It's unnatural as a human being to think like that. But we do make merry sometimes referencing customs and cultures, but it isn't racism. It's a very serious discussion that needs to be had, I believe, that isn't being had anywhere. And that bit of audio, that clip, well, that wouldn't air today. And if it did air today, the production team behind that radio programme and the presenter would most probably be fired. Hey, speaking of fun and games, lucky enough in recent weeks to discover an Irish woman called Grace Ann Kelly. You might be aware of her. She's an actress. She's on Twitter. Has got a good CV, got a good showreel, is well known in theatrical circles in Ireland. And recently she's begun uploading little 35, 40, 50 second segments to Twitter, which are highly amusing and generally to do with coronavirus and the coronavirus narrative. And our most recent upload a couple of days ago dealt with if you think it's about a virus. It's not just about a virus. This woman is very talented, Grace Ann Kelly.
If you're being told what direction to walk in, if you're being told where you can and can't stand, if you're being told when you can and can't breathe, if you're being told what you can and can't read, if you're being told what's essential for you and non-essential for you, if you're being told how many people are allowed into your house, if you're being told what distance you can travel, and you still think that this is just about a virus, that your government is going to save you from. I'm sorry to break it to you, but you have two brain cells. Two that occasionally spark off each other, if you're lucky. Occasionally.
Grace Ann Kelly there. Follow her on Twitter. Back with you in 60 seconds.
Thanks to you, The Richie Allen Show is the most listened to independent radio show in Europe. Show your support for this unique broadcaster by making a regular financial contribution. Just the price of a cup of coffee each month will make a massive difference. Visit richieallen.co.uk for details. The views and opinions expressed on The Richie Allen Show are those of the guests and the guests alone. They do not necessarily reflect the position of the host or other contributors.
Right, welcome back then. I don't know if you came across a tweet I put out. Why would you? Why would you be looking at my tweets? But I tweeted a story from the Daily Mail website, so Mail Online. Short time, not long before I went to air today. It's a horrible story, really. It's a very good video, though, and it relates to a nasty incident in a place called, where did it happen? I know it's in the West Midlands anyway, and it's in a supermarket in the West Midlands, and in said supermarket a woman is going about her business doing her shopping, but she isn't wearing a mask, and she is accosted, is this woman, by two West Midlands police officers. And they give her a fixed penalty notice, saying that she's broken a guideline around coronavirus. And all of this is filmed by a man standing nearby. It isn't clear to me whether the man has any relationship with the woman not wearing the mask. But it's a dreadful little thing. And it kind of gives you, I suppose, a little glimpse into where things are going in the near future. You know, the ira papillon bitter aspect of all of this. Woman walking around a supermarket, doesn't have a mask on, she's exempt. She doesn't have to justify that. She's accosted by two police officers who are absolutely adamant that they're going to give her a fixed penalty notice, even though at one stage she shows them an exemption card that she's downloaded to her phone from gov.uk, the government website. But the police officers are having none of it, despite the fact that they do not have any right whatsoever to ask her for proof that she's exempt. They have no right to do that under any law, right? It's dubious that they even have any right to ask her, why isn't she wearing a mask? That's debatable. But once she says, look, I'm exempt, I don't need to do that, they should leave her alone, but they don't. The entire thing has been captured on camera. It's on Mail Online. It's fairly ugly. And I suppose it's indicative of the way things are going at the moment. If you want to see that video, or if you want to see that link, follow me. Don't follow me on Twitter. Follow me on Twitter. But if you go to my Twitter feed thing, it's one of the most recent posts I put on there. 3 minutes past four this Friday, the 27th of November. Let's move on. Okay. Now, the UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson has today been, he's been out defending the simplicity and the clarity of so-called tier allocations for COVID rules in England. You might be aware of this. You should be aware of it. Yesterday afternoon, the government said lockdown will end this coming Tuesday, and then every region of the country will revert back into the tier system, which means that lockdown won't really end. Because 55 million people learned yesterday that they will remain in the strictest two tiers of rules when lockdown ends, so lockdown won't really end. Okay? The government has said it will finally publish an impact assessment before MPs get a chance to vote on these new rules on Tuesday. So the government has said, right, finally, we will publish an impact assessment which will look at the economic cost of these new measures. It isn't clear today whether the impact assessment will cover health, as in will cover the health impact of lockdown on people. Not the COVID impact now, but the health impact of people just because they were locked down. Not clear about that. We'll see. We'll wait and see on Tuesday. It's left hoteliers, pubs, restaurants, restaurateurs absolutely apoplectic. And some of them have been in tears when speaking on UK television and radio programmes today, basically saying we are fooked. We're fooked. We're finished. We can't open up in December. We're finished. We depend on that Christmas trade. We're done. Kay Burley had a government spokesman, in fact, on her programme this morning talking about this in the form of the Housing Secretary, Robert Jenrick. She asked him, after they talked about the reverting to the three-tier system and how 55 million people would end up in the top two tiers, basically meaning lockdown is not really going to end next week. After all of that, she asked him about vaccines. And yesterday's news that the UK vaccine, which was the Oxford-AstraZeneca collaboration, is facing questions over the data, over how effective the vaccine is. The questions that came about yesterday are around efficacy levels. It looks like somebody or some bodies involved with AstraZeneca and Oxford have been telling tall tales about how effective their vaccine might be. Kay Burley got into this and more with the Housing Secretary, Robert Jenrick, on her programme today.
You talked about the vaccine. It's a bit of concern about the Oxford vaccine this morning, not least because of America wanting other tests and some confusion about how effective it is depending on which age group you're in. Where are we with that? Are we concerned?
I don't think there's any reason to be unduly concerned. I'm not an expert in vaccines, so you're probably better off asking others. But we have now formally written to the body that will independently assess the veracity and the safety of the vaccine to do their work. They'll do that in the coming days or weeks as quickly as they're able to come to a judgment. And then it'll be at that point that, armed with their approval, that we'll be able to start rolling it out.
So there's no concern? There's no reason to be concerned?
Well, I haven't heard reasons to be concerned, but we have to let the independent evaluation happen now. The Chief Medical Officer last night at the Prime Minister's press conference was very clear that although he has seen much of the evidence, the full weight of evidence will now sit with the independent evaluation, who will do their own analysis, decide whether it's right to move forward. If it is, then it will be rolled out.
We're pegging on that vaccine, aren't we? We really need it to work. You say you mentioned it yesterday. You also said that we shouldn't hug family members at Christmas. Will you be hugging your family members at Christmas?
Well, we're still deciding what we're going to do at Christmas. I've been talking to my parents, who one of whom is in his 80s. My mum's a bit younger. Both have been shielding at different times. And we're going to make a judgment in the coming weeks as to what we want to do. And I think that's what families across the country will be doing. There are rules now. You know, we're very pleased we've been able to agree across United Kingdom legal framework. But that's just the baseline, isn't it? Each individual family will be weighing up, is this the right thing for you and your family based on your own circumstances? Are you willing to take the modest risk that's involved in order to bring family together? And there are lots of different options, from the whole family coming together, you know, at home, to perhaps meeting up for lunch with the windows open or going out for a walk on Christmas Day. So there are different options available, and families will have to use their own personal judgment.
Faisal has tweeted regarding the video coming out of West Midlands, the West Midlands police basically issuing a fixed penalty notice to a woman in a supermarket. I wonder, says Faisal, if that video wasn't staged to confuse the issue as well as stirring up anger, those police were breaking the law themselves. They were. I'll tell you what I tried to do. And this isn't in any way directed at anybody who's been on this programme before in terms of my guests or anybody else. I try and avoid going down that slippery slope where you begin to think that everything you see or hear is somehow tainted or manipulated in some way. And I understand why people think that, and I understand why people get like that, because there's so much nonsense about, not just in the mainstream media, but everywhere. There are so many lies, there's so much deceit. It's easy to look at everything and think, ah, well, that's just nonsense. I think I've looked at the video on the Mail Online. It looks very genuine to me. I can accept quite easily that police officers haven't a clue, haven't the first idea about what is legitimate to do in terms of what they can do and what isn't legitimate for them to do. And we know that it's become increasingly common in recent weeks to see policemen and women stationed at supermarkets and shopping malls or malls looking for people not wearing masks. It's happening more and more. So to me, it looks fairly legitimate. It doesn't reflect very favourably on the police at all. And the Daily Mail went, you know, to some length in the story, to some lengths, to explain that the police were absolutely wrong here. So I don't see how it suits the establishment narrative or the agenda, which wants everybody to mask up and to keep wearing masks. You know, Dr. Vernon Coleman has been saying to me regularly that he believes it won't be too long before people are encouraged to wear masks outdoors. He believes that. I hope he's wrong. I haven't heard any government representative. I haven't heard any government representative or any politician or any opposition politician. And I haven't yet heard any advisor to the government suggesting that maybe we should wear masks outdoors yet. When I do, I'll be the first to talk about it on here. I don't know. I think it's very possible that the police officers just don't know whether they're coming or going in terms of what they can do and what they can't do. 12 minutes past the hour. But yeah, it's possible. Anything is possible, I suppose. Here's a little rant for you. Angela Epstein is a journalist based up here in the Northwest. She's based in Manchester. And on the news that when the lockdown ends, we're all going to be in lockdown anyway by proxy, by nature of the fact that we will be in tiers 2 and 3, which is no change really to lockdown. Angela Epstein was on Adam Bolton's programme on Sky News this morning. She's not a happy bunny at all.
Oh, it's simply shocking. I mean, this is going to be ruinous, continually ruinous for the economy. It's devastating for mental health. It's terrible that families can't see each other. I mean, it's a narrative that so many people know about. I mean, 34 million people are now going to be worse off than they were before lockdown, which begs the question, I know it's already been asked, what was the point of lockdown? It's the sheer illogical, inconsistent, authoritarian approach, which makes people like myself in the North feel that, you know, the cliche of the Westminster bubble couldn't be any more true. It's a perfectly eloquent expression of that. Just to give you a quick example, Adam, in Trafford, which is one of the boroughs of Greater Manchester, the 10 boroughs in Greater Manchester, the infection rate is 170 per 100,000. That's 20% below the national average. They're still in tier 3, but St Helens, which has the same level, is in tier 2. The government needs to now think about a way to make us live with the virus. It's enough. It's lives versus livelihoods, obviously. And the problem is that they don't trust us to have any common sense. You know, we're not all going to fall out of the pub drunk and off our heads. You know, we just want to exist and we want to live. And they're not allowing us to have any kind of coping strategies. We all know about small retailers suffering. Meanwhile, you go into somewhere like the large supermarkets who make great fanfare of all their COVID-safe protocols, but they have hand sanitizer that they don't compel you to use, and everybody's touching stuff. So the sheer illogical, irrational nature of it all just makes me weep in despair. It is enough. Let us out. Trust us. I mean, obviously, you know, loved ones, we're not going to go and hug them, precisely because they're our loved ones. We don't want to make them ill. But to badge us in the North as some kind of plague-carrying horrors with some kind of ready-breath glow around us, and every time we go near somebody, we're going to annihilate them, is the kind of propaganda nonsense that has to now stop. Let us out.
Let us out, she says. Let us out. But it keeps coming to my mind when I hear, I mentioned earlier on today, if you were listening to TV, radio, news programs in the UK today, this morning, this afternoon, you will have heard a lot of people who work in hospitality. Not just owners of venues or owners of pubs, but quite a lot of staff. Very worried and very upset. Understandably, they thought that from next week they would be able to open up again and that they would be able to make some much, well, desperately needed revenue ahead of Christmas, right? Christmas parties, works dues, as we called them, works dues, office parties, all of that. But many pubs and many venues won't be allowed to open because they don't serve what has come to be described as a substantial meal. So they can't open. And they were on television, on radio, understandably very upset. And many of them today were in tears. And I say again, why don't you open? What have you got to lose? If you can go on a national television programme and say, look, we're screwed. We can't afford to be closed another day. We can't afford to be closed for another weekend. We're finished. The furlough money is another massive debt that we will have to pay back in order to remain in business. The business owners will have to pay back the furlough money. It staggers me that a lot of people don't seem to understand that. They seem to think it's free money. It isn't free money. And when the businesses can't pay back the furlough money, which is only one part of an overall debt accrued through not trading, when they go under, well, the government has underwritten those loans. So you will have to pay it back. I will have to pay it back. So what have you got to lose? Open your business. Do the operators of licensed premises, licensed premises means licensed to sell alcohol, are they part of a collective? Is there a union? Yes, there is. There is in Ireland, the Vintners Association. Why don't they get together and say, listen, sod them. We're going to open up anyway. And we're all going to do it today at the same time. 4 o'clock, every one of us going to put our tables and chairs outside, is going to turn that sign on the door around until it displays open, and we're going to serve our drinks. But they don't. They go on telly. They cry about it. And I don't understand it. Richard Tice is the former Brexit Party chairman. Now, the Brexit Party, you may be aware, if you listen to this programme, you will be aware, has rebranded itself as the Reform Party. And it's now a party, not so much about Brexit, as it is about the lockdown. It's an anti-lockdown party. Richard Tice, Nigel Farage's best mate. He was on Mike Graham's programme on Talk Radio earlier on, and he had quite a bit to say for himself, Richard Tice.
It's quite unbelievable. I mean, it really is. I am absolutely steaming from every sinew of my body with frustration, with incandescent anger at what this government is doing to this country. They're not running the country. They are literally ruining the country. And, you know, I had a nervousness that the government would do this, that they would basically keep us in lockdown, but pretend it was called something else. Essentially, they've moved almost the whole country upwards into a tighter level of lockdown than was previously the case under the previous tiers. You know, as far as we're concerned at Reform UK, the whole country should either be in tier zero or tier one. And the proof of the pudding, Mike, is the data. And it's always good to focus on the data. The government doesn't seem very good on that. Look at the data coming out of Liverpool. And as Julie was highlighting earlier, when she completely skewered the housing secretary, Robert Jenrick, The Liverpool cases data started to fall in October. And then when Liverpool started testing with the new rapid lateral flow test on the 6th of November, over the next 2 weeks, the cases there plummeted per 100,000 by over 50%. And what that's actually showing is that I think the whole country is being misled based on false data from the government standard PCR tests, where I think there's huge contamination in the laboratories where they're processed. And the new lateral flow test is producing results just one-fifth of the positives, just one in five of the positives that you are seeing from the government's PCR test in the same community in Liverpool. So you've got a direct comparison there using two different types of tests. And what it's showing is that the government standard test they're using all over the country, I think, is wholly inaccurate, can't be trusted. And all of what's going on is based on dodgy, false, incorrect data. And the question is, and we need to establish this soon, and I'm working hard on this, the question is, who in government truly knows what is going on?
Well, I'm sure plenty of them know what's going on. But if they're personally compromised, if they're not in a position to publicly call it out, well, they're not going to call it out. I'm sure they know that the PCR tests are worthless. He made a very good point there. I hope you picked that up. He said the lateral flow tests are making a mockery of the PCR tests because the lateral flow tests are picking up coronavirus in one in five tests being administered, he said, as compared to the rate of positive tests that are showing on the PCR tests. Of course, the data doesn't add up, and nor does it support what we've had to endure for the last 7, 8, 9 months. But who's going to do anything about it? Well, he kind of gets into that. Richard Tice, the chairman of the Reform Party, here on Talk Radio. Who's going to do anything about it?
Yeah, I think they are. There's no question. You know, you can just look from social media. The frustration, the anger is growing. And I guess really the question is, at what point do some of us say, do you know what, we're done. Enough is enough. We're going to organise some form of huge show to the government that we're not going to put up with this anymore.
I like that. He's not saying that we organise some sort of huge protest. I admire people who protest. I admire people who travel great distances to attend protests. I'm all in favour of them. I would never try to dissuade you or anybody from attending a protest. But they don't do anything. Governments don't give a rat's arse about protests. They don't. And the reason they don't is because the media, the government, is on the same side. And once the mainstream media, I mean, how many, we saw 40 to 50,000 people protesting in Trafalgar Square, didn't we? But the vast majority of people in the country were not aware of that, didn't see that, and didn't hear from the speakers who attended those protests, nor did they hear from the protesters themselves. Because the media, basically, it was a media blackout, effectively. Right? We saw that before. The protests are great, but they don't achieve very much. Action. And he's not calling for a protest here. He's calling for action. And it sounds like he's basically calling for businesses all over the country to turn their backs on the government and just begin to trade as they were trading prior to March this year.
What point do some of us say, do you know what, we're done. Enough is enough. We're going to organise some form of huge show to the government that we're not going to put up with this anymore. And, you know, all ideas gratefully received, but really and truly...
Well, you don't need any ideas, Richard. If you are a business owner, operator, get back to business. Ignore them. And again, if enough of you do it at the one time, don't stagger it. Everybody, or as many as you possibly can muster, on a given day, tomorrow, say we're opening our doors again. Now, use a bad word here. Now, fuck off. We're opening our businesses again. We're not going to continue to commit suicide to protect somebody we've never met, who doesn't give a shit about us, about whether we live or die, from some alleged respiratory infection that 99.7% of those getting it survive. No thanks, we're going to open our businesses en masse. I'm not sure that's going to happen.
But, you know, we should just not allow our country to be ruined, to be destroyed, tens of thousands of businesses going to the wall, millions of jobs disappearing, our young people being locked up in universities, suicide soaring. I mean, it's just, it's utterly mind-boggling. And the sooner that we can force change and have a real show of discontent, the better.
Yeah, the better. How soon is now? Mentioned the Smiths earlier on. How soon is now? There isn't much time left, really. I mean, I'm not going to get into the economy today. Not a lot of time left, is there, really, to do anything? The time is now. Again, if you're listening to this and you've got a business and you can't sleep, you're arguing with your other half, you're stressed to the point that you're taking calming medication, what have you got to lose by opening your business? What? They'll fine you? You don't have any money anyway. You're down to your last few bob. You're hemorrhaging money. You're not earning anything. Open your doors. Put your signs outside. And turn your back on tyranny. Because it's tyranny. It's a tyranny to threaten people with fines and visits from the police if they open their businesses. That's not authoritarianism. That's fascism. Let's call it what it is. And it's fascism when you've got a media that isn't just in cahoots with those pushing this agenda, this great reset, fourth industrial revolution. The media isn't just in cahoots with it. It's fully in bed with it. It's driving it. That's fascism. So stand up to fascism. Ignore the Muppets on social media calling you selfish because you don't want financial ruin, because you don't want to end up on the street with nothing. You don't want to end up in a psychiatric institution because of the stress of it. Ignore the moron who says that you're selfish because you don't want to protect somebody you never met. And again, who doesn't give a shit whether you live or die. And again, who's not going to chip in to help pay your arrears. Stand up to it. And don't tell me it's easy for you to say, Richie. Anybody who's ever known me at any time in my life, my days in Ireland, my early days in England, my days in Spain, anybody who knows me knows I wouldn't put up with it. Go down fighting. There's honour in that, isn't there? Be a man. Be a woman. Say no. Fuck no. Turn your back on it. There's no other way out of it now. They're not backing off. Don't wait for a saviour. There is no saviour. You're the saviour. Open your business. Tell your staff it's time to get back to work. And tell Boris Johnson, Chris Whitty and Patrick Vallance to fuck off. And to stay fucked off. Have a great weekend, you. We'll talk again on Monday at 5 o'clock when Johnny Vedmore and Vernon Coleman will be my guests. Bye now.